You're listening to the Master Coach Collection. Welcome, Diana Ideas, to this series of podcast interviews with Master Certified Coach Credential Holders. It's nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Before I turn to you, I'm going to address everyone who's listening to us. My name is Gideon Coleman, and I work as an executive coach. I hold a Master Certified Coach credential, and this podcast came about because I wanted my son, who's my biggest champion, who's always saying, "Papa, you're a Master Certified Coach," to know what that actually is, you know, provide some context. And in thinking about it, I realized, well, he's not the only one who doesn't know what a Master Certified Coach is. And I think that everyone listening will really benefit from listening to this conversation today between Diana and me, but also every other conversation in this series, to really get a sense of an exciting tribe of people that I'd like more of us to know about and more of us to engage with. And I'd like this conversation and all the others in the series to sketch out what can be, you know, when we're as direct, but also as spacious as I know Master Certified Coaches to be in all of our conversations, not just professional coaching conversations. So I'm going to turn back to Diana. Diana, here we are. And before I interview you, I want to talk a little bit about how I've gotten to know you. So our colleague, Brittany McDonald, has convened a group of some of the younger North American Master Certified Coaches. And you and I are part of that group. And you made an offer to all of us to join a mentor coaching group that you're running for people who are in hot pursuit of their Master Certified Coach credential. I joined as a guest client so that people under your mentorship would have an opportunity to coach me. And when I showed up, I experienced the most unexpected thing, which is apart from you, every single coach in that space was male. And in about a decade of being in a lot of coach spaces, I've never had that happen before. That ratio of male to female coaching.
Welcome to Hawthorne Union.
I want to hear more about Hawthorne Union and what makes it what makes it Hawthorne Union. But man, coaching skews female, there's nothing not to love about that. But when I find a male coaching space, especially one as male as the one that you run, it's a surprise. So yeah, thank you for that.
Very unexpected and refreshing surprise.
So I want to really zero in on you. When you were growing up, Diana, who was the first person who really saw and heard you?
What a great question. See, this is what happens when you hang out with coaches. So my parents were amazing, are amazing. You know, it's interesting. I was loved and supported my whole life in a way that most people aren't. And both of my parents took their childhoods and some of the challenges from their childhood, though well-intentioned, right? Their parents did the best they could, but there were a lot of things that they wanted to address in mine. So I I lived a very privileged life as far as being supported and being loved and just being kind of held up. And, you know, so to me, kind of coaching was like, wait, you can get paid for this? Like, you just get paid for the way that, you know, you show up and take care of people and help them pursue their dreams. So that was something that was modeled for me by my parents. And so, you know, I've had it from a very young age, and I do feel like it's such a gift that people pay me to just see them and support them and be a part of their wins and their process. It's just, that's something I'm so thankful for.
Would you color in some of the ways in which you felt seen, heard, and supported by your parents?
Sure. Yeah. So the thing that my dad would always say is that, you know who I'm for. And so it would ultimately, whether he was asking hard questions or whether he was supporting you, he would also say, like, I'll be the bad guy, right? Like, if I didn't want to go somewhere or do something, he's like, oh, you can blame me. I'll be the bad guy. So, you know, but that's that kind of bottom line. And actually, I say that to my clients now. I'll say, look, if you're, you know, if it's, because oftentimes clients want a little bit more consulting. And I'll say, look, if you're going against my direct recommendation, I'll let you know, that's not pure coaching. That's not master coaching. But the point is that I'm in, I'm here for you. I support you. And to me, that's just a version of my dad's, you know who I'm for. And then, you know, with my mom, in different phrasing in different ways, but, you know, I think about, I was always going to be a teacher. And when I was a teacher, I was then not sure, do I want to do this? Like, is this going to be my career? And it was the only thing I had never questioned. And my mom's just such a great listener. She's so compassionate and such a great listener. So, I mean, they're both, you know, natural coaches in their own way. And she said to me, well, I have some ideas. Would you like to hear them? Which is so funny, because that's actually a PCC marker now, right? Like, is to offer, like, hey, I have some ideas if you would like to hear them, right? And I was like, oh, I would, right? Because I was just at this point in my life where the thing I thought I was going to do for my whole life, and I never questioned, you know, all of a sudden. And so to just be known in that way. And there's actually, you know, there's only one thing I can think of in my life that my dad didn't support me in. And I even, like, I was able to bring it up. Like, I was supported enough to bring it up, to just be like, hey, like, you normally support what I do. They normally were encouraging me to make choices that maybe I wouldn't even consider, that would support me. You know, why aren't you supporting me in this? And actually, you know what? I said it to my mom once as well. Like, it was so foreign to me not to have their full support. And they were like, you know, the thing my dad was resistant to, he was concerned about my safety. He just wanted to make sure that I was safe. It wasn't that he didn't support me. He just wanted to make sure that I was going into an environment where I was safe. And with, you know, the one that my mom brought to mind, it was just more that she saw a different vision. She saw a bigger picture, and she was totally right. But it's like, I had to navigate that myself. And that's actually something she said to me at one point that was really helpful to me. Cause that's the thing, you know, our parents have known us for our whole lives, right? So you talk about, if they have the language and the ability to reflect back in the way that coaches do, that's a miraculous thing. She said, I tell you what I think because you do whatever you want. And that's very true. Like, that's actually a theme for my life. But until she articulated that to me, it had never even occurred to me. And it's funny now, because one of the assessments that I use in my business, called the Predictive Index, there's a factor called casual with rules, and it's the widest factor combination. It's the most prevalent kind of thing on my assessment. And it's the idea that, you know, I follow the spirit of the law versus the letter of the law. So it's interesting to me just how, you know, I'm so fortunate to have had that level of support. Like, we didn't necessarily have the money for all the things, right? Or, you know, it doesn't mean that it was all a walk in the park and there weren't any challenges, but the quality of support that I was given was support that, I mean, honestly, it's not normal. And so here I am, and it makes it a lot easier for me to support others.
Yeah. It's, really beautiful to hear this. In the last several interviews I've done, so many of the coaches talked about really not having been seen for years and years, some for decades before they really first felt seen and heard. And I feel sad hearing those stories and hearing yours. It fills me with joy. And as someone who's basically because of COVID circumstances, the flexibility I have, the flexibility my wife doesn't have, I've had to really put the coaching practice I want on the back burner and focus on being a parent. And boy, has it gotten under my skin every single day of every single week, the fact that, you know, it's not an option. It's just, you know, here you are, show up. And it's particularly driven me nuts since September, when my son's online schooling started. He's in kindergarten now. And I don't remember kindergarten being as academic as it seems to be now. But I've just poured hours and hours every day into making sure he's all set up. And on Friday, my wife and I had a parent-teacher conference. I think it's the last of the year, the last scheduled one of the year. And they were like, well, you know, your son is, you know, meeting all the markers we have. And having heard that and begun to let that in, I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to do with him whatever feels good, because I'm tired of the academics, you know? Yeah, we're reading together. Now that he can read, that's cool. But like today, I'm like, you know, we're going to do Lego for 2 hours because nothing else matters.
Yeah. Well, and what I hear is that you're using your coaching skills. You may feel that they're on hold, but you're pouring them into your little people, right? And then the other thing, that's actually why I switched from being a teacher to being a coach, is that I feel that my students learned from me because I loved them. And because I supported them and because I cared about them as people. And of course I cared that they were learning, but it was less important to me that they were learning other than that they had a safe environment where they were supported. And so for me, that was actually some of the conflict for why coaching made more sense, because it is more focused on the person versus the output. So good job, Dad.
You know, when it comes to applying coaching skills to parenting, I went through the master certified coach credentialing process last year. And as I was practicing for it and realizing, you know, how I had to take everything I knew about coaching, break it down, put it back together again. One day I had this like stupid epiphany, like just basic, but how much I've been heartbroken by clients over the years, just not feeling seen and not feeling heard by the parental figures, authority figures in their lives. And, you know, I'm having this epiphany just sitting at our dining room table, looking into our living room at my kids. And I'm like, I'm their parental figure. I'm their dad. They need me to see them. They need me to hear them. And so I spent the next 5 minutes just narrating everything that I saw them doing and everything that I heard them doing. And I said, I see you doing this and I hear you doing this. And it's like so stupid simple that you wouldn't do it. And I did it. And I, over 5 minutes, I watched their frequency go from like normal to like super giddy, because it was like, oh my God, I'm being seen. I'm being heard. And they couldn't take it. They were having so much fun. So yeah. That, I mean, and that's just one example. Like there's so many examples.
Yeah, it works for adults too.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it is amazing to me how many people, of course the sessions are confidential, but it's amazing to me how many people tell me their secrets in an initial session. Don't even know. But like the act of just listening. So my book is Listen. It's called Listen, Mentor Coaching for Coaches. The act of just listening or creating space or holding the space for someone, especially when we are just present or reflect that back, it is very rare.
I think the the idea that it's rare is kind of hard for me to swallow, because I'm, you know, in this coaching mindset all the time. But to think about how rare it is really painful.
Well, it's also job security. You know, I mean, and that's not to take away from the pain of it.
Comfort, Diana.
just a little bit, right? A little silver lining, you know. But I think the thing is, and that's actually what's interesting as we look at over time, you know, when I got, I don't know about when you got your PCC, but I got my PCC in 2010, I think. Uh-huh. So the contract coaching and the coaching in companies was not what it is now, right? There's been a whole movement, and especially, you know, people talk a lot of smack about millennials, but millennials in many ways have really democratized coaching. Mm-hmm. And as we look at diversity, equity, and inclusion and coaching for all and things like that, you know, there's a way that when millennials hit the workforce, it's like, this should be a benefit. I should be heard, right? And people will talk smack about like Pretty Little Snowflakes and helicopters and things like that. But the point is that there's becoming this expectation that like who I am matters, that I deserve to be heard and listened to and supported. Mm-hmm. And so that's changed work.
See like zero benefit in talking smack about that mindset.
I think it's important to look at, you know, because with the clients, like I hear your pain, right? I see it, I hear it. And if that's part of it, right? There's a full range of emotion. For me, I see that pain and I just see kind of opportunity, because it's like, well, here you are now, right? And it only takes one, but someone made an investment of at least time, if not time and money, and mm-hmm. now is accessing a whole different level of resource that maybe they didn't know was possible until now. And that's a really beautiful thing to be a part of.
True. It really is. I'm going to shift focus. Who are you?
Yeah, who am I? Yeah. What would you like to know?
What you'd like to share.
Okay. Who am I? So my name is Diana Ideas. It used to be Diana Labaco. And I was born and raised in California. I lived on the Navajo Reservation as a teacher for a couple years in New Mexico. Then back in San Francisco, where I learned about, didn't know coaching was a thing, fell in love with coaching. Then worked to train coaches, work with coaches, and then also build sustainable coaching programs. Lived in Nashville for a couple years. So have so many friends and loved ones in the South. The South made me a nicer person because I wasn't necessarily into small talk, but becoming a consultant in the South, specifically in kind of the smaller towns of Alabama to build coaching programs, definitely changed my style. Glad to be back in California by the beach. Who am I? So the words most often used to describe me, which is interesting because it's not necessarily how we see ourselves, are bold and passionate. I resonate with being very intuitive. I'm also very direct, very supportive. I love being in or at the water, and it's my, you know, as far as one of the things you asked about with like Hawthorne Union. So Hawthorne Union is a space created for coaches by coaches. So really wanted to have a space where coach continuing education is not what it should be. Frankly, a lot of it's just boring and lecture, and that's not how I like to do things or we like to do things.
Yeah.
So it's a very collaborative, interactive environment. I believe if you bring community together, especially when that community is coaches, that there's so much you can build and do. So we do very community-based continuing education where, you know, you don't just get to sit there and phone it in, like you're going to be engaged. And then also, you know, I work mostly with businesses and leaders in businesses. So professional, I do mostly executive and professional coaching, but I also mentor, I'm an assessor, and train coaches. What's going on in the back of my head is what one of the guys in the union told me is that when you ask an American kind of like who they are, they say what they do. So that's why I tried to sprinkle in a couple of the more like personal things. I've been to 6 continents. I want to go to Antarctica by the time I'm 50, just to, you know, not just plant my feet on it. I don't even know if that's relevant, but get into that water, even though I'm sure it's cold. But I just feel like, hey, you know, it's important to have visions and dreams. And, you know, it feels like such a gift in my life that I get to be a part of supporting people and I get to be paid for that. And what's interesting in this pandemic, which I think has meant so many different things to so many different people, it's been a really kind of reinforcing of my entrepreneur life, which is not something I chose. My second book is called Reluctant Entrepreneur, because this is not a life that I necessarily chose for myself, but it is one I'm choosing now. And so I think something that actually brings to mind that a word that's very important to me and a concept that's very important to me is choice. Mm-hmm. Because I believe if we have choices or believe that we have choices, then we can make better choices. Even if we choose the same thing, we have our defaults for a reason and our defaults serve us. But if it's our default, because it's our only option versus a choice that we pick, that's very important. And then another word that's really important to me is space. So I think it's really important to hold the space for other people and also have space held for ourselves. Because one of the things that's more challenging to me as a coach in my personal relationships is that because I listen and because I ask questions, a lot of times people take up all the air. And I don't necessarily need to take up that air, but then that's not space for me to show up as well and show up as myself and the me that's not just a coach. So that's one of the things I run into.
Wow. One of the things I'm learning as I road test these questions is that when I ask you who you are, there are so many doors that you show me and I'm like, which one do I go through next? Cause there are so many good ones. If I were to ask you to choose a door to really give us a grand tour of, based on the answers you've given so far, which would you open?
Sure. Well, I know you wanted to know more about the men of Hawthorne Union. So did you have another question?
Why don't we talk about Hawthorne Union?
Yeah.
What is up with that?
Yeah. So that's just how it happens. It's not that I didn't recruit women, but what I find what's interesting is, so there are right now, our ratio, there are 6 of us. So it is 5 guys and me. Uh-huh. They are amazing, amazing men. All except one are coaches and the one is, you know, very experienced in what he's in the sales side. And kind of as we build out more of our executive and sales offerings, because sales is so important in coaching, because coaches start coaching because they're coaches. They're not necessarily comfortable in sales. But the rest of them are coaches mostly that have been mentored or trained by me, some of whom have been my direct reports, and then some who just kind of joined along the way. So it is interesting as a woman who owns the company and is the founder, who was also a women's studies major, how many people are like, you have all men, like, is that a diversity issue? But in my opinion, that's actually important diversity, an important perspective, because you have, as you said, the coaching space tends to be very female.
Well, A, it's a diversity issue, and B, you're addressing it, period.
Yeah, I mean, hey, you know, like it's just, and what I find is that with the women that I've partnered with, the women that I partner with either have full-time jobs or contractually are not obligated at a place where they can kind of pick up contracts or do work through Hawthorne Union at this point, or the women own their own businesses and then we become partners. So for example, Love, I partner with someone named Love who does diversity, equity, and inclusion work. Mm-hmm. And so I partner with her in her business and we're both business owners and we collaborate. So it's just that there's not women on the roster. Doesn't mean that there's not women involved. But at the same time, I think it's interesting because I am a very direct and assertive woman. On the Enneagram, I'm an eight, so the challenger. So that's a lot of kind of more stereotypically considered masculine energy. And then for, you know, the coaches that I work with, you know, in their level of emotional intelligence, oftentimes that emotional intelligence is associated with a more feminine energy. So it makes the, you know, it makes the gender roles a bit more, I think probably a bit more fluid. Like, I don't know that it really matters. But, you know, especially at this day and age where, you know, we're looking at gender and what does it mean and who does it mean it to, and what about what people identify with. So these men are such a blessing in my life personally and professionally, and I'm so thankful for them. But it is funny because, you know, we end up hanging out in some all male coaching spaces. And actually the men that you met, two of them are part of Hawthorne Union, but one is a coach that I trained so many years ago, who's pursuing his MCC. And then, you know, you joined us. And then another was a client that's only recently a client who I did some mentoring with. So it's just a matter of what I love about the coaching space and also creating community with coaches is like, you see who shows up.
Yeah.
And they show up, you know, and the way the coaches show up, they get invited back. So it doesn't, you know, I think it doesn't, in my mind, it's more about how we show up and hold community and are together and listen and support each other than, you know, some of those other demographics.
You mentioned earlier on the gap between continuing coach education that is and that could be. would you color that in?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I took my first, so I finished, let's say I finished in 2010, it was either 2010 or 2011. I got my PCC and I took my first continuing ed, and it was just someone reading off a PowerPoint, and it was an MCC who I didn't necessarily agree with. And so for that was the moment where I was like, oh, just because you're an MCC doesn't mean I agree with you. And I think that for me, that was a light bulb, not that anywhere else that I necessarily thought like, oh, this is an authority figure or whatever that I would agree with them. But it was just boring. And, you know, coming from an education background, being a camp counselor, like I just, you know, it's education should be fun. Like we should learn and have a good time. You know, obviously we learn from hard lessons as well, but I think that's all the more reason that we should have fun. And the thing is that to become an MCC, or when we talk about what an MCC is, you have to scrub all the expertise out anyway. So you're the expert in not being the expert in order to be an MCC. So for me, I don't like lectures. I think they're boring. I mean, you have some amazing lecturers, and so there are exceptions to that rule. But for me to, you know, to hold a space and have a topic, we have a couple slides, but we do demos because there's all these coaching classes that have no coaching in them. So all Hawthorne Union, right? Like, well, all Hawthorne Union classes include demos, so you know what it sounds like. And then, you know, we talk about concepts, but then there's time for people to respond, or coaching triads, or what do you think about this quote, or what do you think about this concept, or how would you try that on, or what would you say? So there's so many things that coaches do for continuing education that aren't specifically designed for coaches. And so Hawthorne Union is an exception to that. And the other thing is having been an employee for multiple companies where I created training content, it bothered me that when I left those companies, I didn't own the content. And they were great companies. It doesn't mean that they wouldn't share it with me, but I don't own those decks, and I don't necessarily own those concepts. And so I didn't want Hawthorne Union to be like that. And so like anything created with Hawthorne Union, it's shared, but it also means that, you know, I really hope that the guys who are in the union don't leave it. But even if they do, that's their intellectual property. And I think also as a business coach and a business person, you know, creating opportunities for people to have revenue streams and intellectual property is really important, because that's what we're trying to build ultimately in coaching, is sustainability and lasting change. And so if you don't have revenue streams and you don't have protected intellectual property, then it might be a great experience, but you know, it's not lasting.
I'm really curious about the values underpinning what you're talking about right now, because I've come to accept that, you know, part of every relationship is this transactional element. And I don't agree with people who are like, oh no, transactional, that's awful. Oh no, it's just part of things. But it seems like you recognize that, and you recognize that there are other values that must be woven into the fabric of any community that you're going to take seriously, any organization that you're going to invest your time in. What are the values above and beyond the transactional that you bake into your life and business?
Interesting question. So for me, it's, do I feel heard? Do I feel heard? Do I feel listened to? Because I'm innovative. I have a lot of ideas. I have a lot of opinions. And am I considered a partner? Because, as you know, moving towards MCC and just even getting an ICF credential in the first place, we're operating under the premise that our clients are resourceful and whole, and then we're partnering with them to establish the agenda and where we're going. So if there's not a sense of partnership for me, then I'm not really interested. I mean, I don't have a problem with transactional approaches because, mm-hmm. you know, especially for as coaches, as we're building our business, or if you're contracting for someone, you know, the exchange, the money exchange for a service provided, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and I also, that's one of the classes I teach. So I teach a finances and gender class, and it's all about how coaches support people through money, because there's so many emotions about money. Like people, there's a quote, I'm not sure who said it, but someone said, you know, people are more comfortable talking about sex than they are about money. There's so much shame. There's so much anxiety. There's so much anger. There's so much divorce from it. You know, this is just, there's legacy issues. There's current issues. So people have so much around money. So I think, you know, a lot of what's, and I work with a lot of financial professionals, and I work with a lot of people about their finances. So I talk about money all the time. Mm-hmm. But in addition to that, I feel like there need, at least for me, to decide that I want to do something. The theme this year for Hawthorne Union, at least for me, is do what you love. So it has to be something I love. And then also, you know, I want to be heard. I want to have partnership. And, you know, flexibility is really important to me. So having that flexibility to kind of flex and respond as needed. So, you know, it's just a matter of we all, there could be another person who gave the answer, like, I'm looking for something really structured. I want to make sure it's this, this, and this, right? So it's just a matter of, you know, finding the fit. Like it has to fit. Hmm. And I think as coaches are starting out, or as people are, if you have non-coaches listening to this podcast, there's a time where, you know, you got to pay the bills, right? So you're potentially just focused on paying the bills. But if you're able to get beyond that, just survival or that potential scarcity mentality, and get into a place of more abundance, and then choice comes up, right? My favorite word, like choices come up, and you're able to choose, okay, what do I really want? What do I want this to look like? What could this be?
Hmm. What's important to you about coaching?
Oh, it's so funny because I normally ask all the questions. I don't normally give answers to things.
And feel free to, you know, there's anything that you want to turn back on me, this is not a one-way street.
Like, okay. Yeah, I'm happy to. It's just, it's funny. It's funny to be in the spotlight, so to speak, as the sun is like blinding my face. Okay. Wait, what was the question?
What's important to you about coaching?
Yeah. What's important to me about the coaching, honestly, it's the space, it's the partnership, and it's the support.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah, it's just such a different type of conversation from the ones we default into. And I think it's a matter of composition. I'm thinking of the word composed. I'm inspired by my daughter, who's 2, and she just broke her leg, and she's showing me that she's very composed. Mm-hmm. She was given a boot and has not been wearing it, And so we told her tonight, it's either this or a cast. And this 2-year-old force of nature gets it, you know. She's like, I don't want a cast. So after, you know, resisting the boot for a week, she's like, okay, I'm putting it on.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, choices.
Composed. Yeah.
But, ownership. But
what, as a coach, I compose myself in a specific way such that things like opinions and all of that falls by the wayside. And it's kind of like it's one of the responsive arts. Like I think of like improv comedy or Aikido or tango, Argentine tango or jazz, where it's not enough to just bring your part. You're constantly listening to your environment. And I don't know. It's just such
co-created.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a thrill to be in a space where I can do that. And, you know, in the fall when I was feeling really constrained and unable to really, you know, book much of anything because of family responsibilities, I remember one coaching session that I just slid into and I was like, oxygen, you know? it's just the freedom and the glee that comes from that kind of responsiveness. And I think there's kind of a rush that I get from the power of seeing someone and hearing someone and doing, I want to say little, but often it's nothing else. And then watching them do something amazing that they didn't think they could do.
That, that like, is amazing.
Isn't that the best?
Yeah, it is amazing. You know, it's interesting having done this now for a longer time, right? I've been a coach 15 years, but just an entrepreneur for about two and a full-time entrepreneur for about 2.5. And as I have more clients that are long-term, you know, before I had a lot of direct reports that are long-term, which is why some of them are in the union now. You know, just that the longevity of the relationships and being part of someone's life, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's even, how much do you talk to the people that are even closest to you in your life once a week or once every other week? You know, if you think about it and
not,
you know,
so just, much. Like I don't have anyone on that schedule unless they're, you know, married to me or descended from me.
Right. Yeah. So it's kind of, you know, the little nuances and being able to kind of show up in someone's life that way. And then also, you know, the promotions and the promotions and the awards and things like that, but then also being able to be there for someone like when they lose someone or their marriage is over, you know, and just to kind of hold the space for those life changes and just be like, I'm here for you. Like, you know, not even what do you need? Cause I think a lot of times we don't even know what we need, but to just hold that space.
Yeah. I'm thinking about a client I have that has been with me for 8 years and used to be weekly. And then a few years ago I was like, are you sure you need the weekly coaching? And so we scaled back to monthly and now I'm not even sure what I do, but when she shows up, there's just this super high energy she has. And I think that it's built upon layer upon layer upon layer upon layer of all these successes that she has aimed for, created, etc. And so there's like this compound joy, just knowing that I'm the one she's talking to. I don't really have to do anything, and she just kind of coaches herself. And it's, I think, my presence that's the catalyst. And it's like, wow, I don't get it, but there it is.
Yeah. I mean, I have that as well, because I'm like, are you sure you want to pay me? Are you getting value out of the time, right? Like, we have to, you know, just for the word out there, just because you're an MCC doesn't mean you don't have concerns that the client isn't seeing value.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes it's just, I'm part of their lives or part of their business, right? And you become someone's person. Or, you know, a lot of times if you're supporting someone who normally is the leader or the supporter, they can be lonely at the top, or supporters need support. And so just kind of holding that space. I realize I say that over and over again. I was actually working with a coach for a while, and I know he couldn't see the value that he was providing me, mm-hmm. but I felt it every day, right? You know, yeah. And he's still a person that I reach out to at times to be like, hey, this happened, you know, because that's who you share it with. So it's such a special relationship, and such a fortunate relationship, which is also why I will say, if you have a coach or a mentor who's not supporting you in your life, find another one.
There's someone else.
there's so many other ones who can support you. Yeah. There's so many other ones out there who can support you. And then I tell clients too, like, try before you buy, because we're different. We have different styles. We have different biases. We have different blind spots. You know, it's important. We have different, you know, some people are looking for different expertise, but I think it's less about that, because it's coaching, and it's really how well do we partner.
When I was starting out, I know I didn't have the confidence to, you know, walk into a conversation knowing that a coaching relationship or a business relationship wasn't going to blossom from it. But I guess time and experience have shown me that to get involved in a coaching relationship with a client that you really shouldn't be involved in a coaching relationship with is a liability. It's a nightmare. It leaves both parties diminished. And so I'm like very forward when I speak to someone who I know is speaking to other people, and I'm like, you know what, find the person who works for you. And if it's not me, for heaven's sake, no hard feelings. You know, I know how bad it is for you to hire me when you know that I'm not the one. Don't do it. You'll regret it. I'll regret it. Let's not do that. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. There's been as I got closer to MCC and scrubbing out all the consulting and all the expertise from the coaching, mm-hmm. I got an influx of clients who wanted me to tell them what to do. Yep. And I was like, and they were like, we want more consulting, or we want more expertise, which is hilarious, right? Because I feel like there's people all over the world falling all over themselves to give advice, or mm-hmm. consulting is a very lucrative field. And so somehow I'm getting these people who want to be told what to do. But, you know, I just had someone who interviewed me and was like, I am looking for answers, which I don't begrudge. Like, I get it. Like, you're looking for answers.
Totally. Just get that on the table now.
Absolutely. And I was like, and that's fine. I was like, but the answers that we come up with are co-created. You know, I'm not going to withhold my opinion from you if you really want it. And, you know, some of the products that they were potentially looking at or other products I sell, where I do more management consulting and I do make more recommendations. And I said, you know, if we go down that path, I don't have a problem giving you recommendations, but if someone tells you they know how to support you and your team, they don't, because they haven't listened to you or your team yet. So, you know, I think it's just a matter of, you know, coaches, especially new coaches, put a lot of pressure on themselves. Like, oh, like, of course, there's coaching, training, consulting, mentoring. Those are all lucrative fields. I'm thankful. You know, the ICF police are not going to tackle you to the ground if you're not 100% coach all the time. But it has to be it has to be style. Like some of the guys that work in the union like consulting more than I do, or like training more than I do, which is awesome because that's
they're great for those engagements.
Yes,
right?
We have other people for people to try on if I'm not a fit, because I am not for everyone, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. I'm not a neutral, so I'm not for everyone.
Thank you for being polarizing. You were talking about, you know, people who seem to be looking for answers, and you mentioned some of the pitfalls in that. But if you were to put a fine point on what value you see in not knowing, what is that?
So when I was pursuing my PCC, I was struggling with a certain concept, and my MCC mentor did not break roll. She didn't tell me. And it was really frustrating because I felt like she had the answer and I didn't know it. And how am I supposed to get this freaking credential because I don't know what I'm doing? And I had to live my way into it. And that was frustrating and it was challenging for me. But when I finally did live my way into it, I realized that she didn't know. She could have broken roll and given me recommendations, but she truly trusted me to be resourceful and whole and to come up with the answers myself. So I think the hard thing is that of course people want answers. Mm-hmm. Of course people want things fixed, especially if they're broken or they're painful. But the thing is, and so it is hard when someone is like, well, I don't have the answers for you, but let's partner to kind of figure out how to support you. Sometimes that's not the quick fix that sometimes people are looking for. Yeah. But I coach leaders as a last resort before termination. And so a question, yeah, I know, right? You want to talk about dicey and polarizing. Yeah. Yep. So when I walk into that room, a lot of times they're like, how do we fix this? And I'm like, I don't know. Do you want to fix this? And if they say yes, then we can start. But the thing is that if it was an easy fix, they would have fixed it and I never would have been hired. Mm-hmm. And then I just walked in, I just met them. I don't know what the fix is, right? So it's just, coaching is more work. Consulting, training, teaching, you know, for the participants, yes, they have to listen and absorb and apply. And there's challenges with that. But to say, you know, it's like the MCC journey to me was the moment in the Matrix where the spoon's bent and he's like, the secret for bending the spoon is there is no spoon. Like that's to me, the journey to MCC. So if there is no answer and it, you know, then you're going to have to evolve, but that's the point. That's coaching.
Yeah. Can you think of a situation in which evolution is not advised? I'm just poking for paradox here.
Yeah, I think the hard thing is that it's interesting when your life choices or how you show up feels threatening to someone else's structure. So when I got divorced, you know, one of my clients was really inspired by the freedom of that. Mm. And then there are other people who, I had someone actually say to me, I don't believe in divorce. And I was like, well, it exists.
It exists, know? Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, I don't know who gets married wanting to get a divorce.
Such a thing.
You're like, this is a thing. And you're just negating my entire experience that's already painful enough without your dumb comment, right? So it is interesting, though, how uncomfortable, or the fact that I don't have kids, and, you know, how uncomfortable that makes some people. And it's interesting the judgments people make on that. And sometimes it's just a judgment of, oh, I think this way is best and you should be like me. I think other times it's the fact that you've made a different choice where I didn't think there was a choice is threatening.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, evolution is change. Innovation is change. you know, when I teach change management, I take people through the stages of grief because I'm like, look, we're dealing with the human element. Like, I don't care how, of course, it's nice if your implementation plan is as flawless as you can possibly make it. But as soon as it hits the humans, like, get the tissues out, man, like, get ready because it's going to be emotional. So I do think that that's sometimes where evolution doesn't get looked at as a good thing. And sometimes we love something how it is and where it is. And it's for a moment in time. And there's grief when it's not that thing anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of not being the things that we were, the things that were, how has coaching shaped your mindset, the work of coaching?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it's so baked in now, right? So it's not half my life yet, but it's, you know, it's a considerable portion of my adult life. You know, I think it impacts everything, you know, it impacts the way I listen, it impacts the way I show up, it impacts the way that I just act in the world. What's interesting in the more recent times, especially in the pandemic, is I see how much it's impacting my personal relationships, because as when COVID hit and my clients really needed extra support, I didn't have as much space or room for people in my personal life who wanted to process. Mm-hmm. And that was an interesting thing to experience. But also for me as an entrepreneur in a pandemic who does not have a second income in my house, it was really important that I be very selective about my inputs, especially while I'm working with a bunch of clients who are in pain and struggle. So, you know, I think what's becomes a more interesting question is sometimes like, who am I without the coach? And obviously I have like elements of my personality that were there before I became a coach, but it's such a part of kind of who I am and how I show up.
Yeah, I'd love to relate some of my own parallel experiences here, because I've found the weight of carrying a family, you know, having meals on the table every single day, you know, taking care of kids to be a little, or I'll just, I don't know. I clearly thought of myself in, I'm an executive coach terms before the pandemic hit. And there were times last year, like in the days before I was informed that I now hold a master certified coach credential, where I thought to myself, maybe I should stop thinking of myself as a coach, because, you know, there's just too much in front of me right now. Like, what would change if I just stopped thinking of myself in these terms? Wow, I find myself in kind of a maelstrom and trying to figure out, wait, where was I going with this? But you know, in the months where I really didn't have that much going on professionally, it was a matter of integrity, because I know what it's like to be there for people. And if I have to cancel when they need me, that's not the coach that I want to be. And like, everything feels like it's on thin ice right now. And I'm you know, muscling my way back to a fuller practice, not a full one, but more than the trickle that it's been. And I'm on pins and needles, because something goes wrong every week. You know, like child breaking a leg last week. That was the last thing we needed. And I think, you know, what the year has taught me, the last year has taught me, is just to surf chaos. And, you know, I'm not always in a mental space where I can show up the way I'm committed to showing up for clients. And in those times, I have very little business even thinking of myself as a coach.
Well, but you're a person.
Yeah.
And you get to be a person.
I think that what I'm seeing is that this gets back to what you were talking about choice. You know, being a coach felt like the default.
Hmm.
And that's kind of a weak place to come from.
Well, and not necessarily. I mean, our defaults, you know, even with presented with choices, our defaults are often what we choose, right? It's our strongest choice. But I believe if it's a choice and it has intention there, it has intention and ownership, then that's a different experience than just being automatic.
Yeah. Well, there has been no room for automaticity over the last year, and so I'm learning something else. I'm not sure what it is yet, but it's an alternative to automatic. I'm a coach. Yeah. You know, one of the things that I'm toying with is, you know, when we start getting toward the end of a conversation, is there anything that has jumped out at you about this conversation that you would like to ask our listeners about?
I'm thinking.
Listeners who've made it this far are going to appreciate you thinking about
this. I know they this way they have a minute too. I think perhaps then choices, right? What choices are you making? And to make sure that you're really making those choices, and also for yourself. So the idea from coaching is a supporting profession. That's some of what we're getting to, right? So there are ways that we support others in our lives. And so the question becomes, who or what supports you? Mm. Because there's a lot of people who feel that support is selfish, but you're supposed to put your own oxygen mask on first. And when I was a kid, I didn't understand. I was like, that sounds selfish, right? But now I understand, because, you know, the martyrs don't have any air and they just pass out in the aisles. So I think the thing is that, you know, as listeners think about, like, what choices are you making, kind of who and what in your life supports you, and how are you making the investment in yourself to choose those things?
Yeah. If you would like to hear from listeners, is there a way that they can contact you?
Sure. Yeah. I can send you my email for the show notes.
Okay. But feel free to just say it right here, right now.
Yeah. Okay. So the easiest one is probably info@hawthorneunion.com. It's HAWTHORNEUNION.com.
Yeah. It's important to think about what supports us and to start noticing the gaps in support. And, you know, if you have a story about someone who is incredibly supportive of you that you'd just like to share, I'd love to hear that. And you can send that to Gideon@kstreetcoaching.com. Yeah. Well, is there anything else, Diana, that you'd like to cover?
Well, I think my other question for listeners, even though I say don't stack questions, but one to try on, is what came up in the silence, right? So while I was thinking, right, what came up for them? Mm-hmm. Because it's something, you know, that's a lot of what I talk about as I train coaches is listening and silence. And it's so important to have silence in and space, right? Here, coming back to my words here, to think about things. So it's important to create those spaces and see what comes up. As far as we wrap, are there any other questions you wanna make sure I answer or attempt?
Well, yeah, I mean, one of my intentions in reaching out to younger master certified coaches is the recognition that, you know, conceivably I'll be part of this community for the next 2-3 maybe more decades.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to get to know who my fellow travelers are. And I know a number of people who have their own coach training and continuing education organizations, and they skew a little older. What's your vision for shaping what coaches continue to learn mm-hmm. over the next few decades?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so to me, it's really important that the coaches have a voice, and they have a voice in what they want to learn. So, you know, some of it is passion. So, you know, Jesse teaches authentic masculinity because that's really a passion that he has in his life. I was reading Barbara Stanley's Prince Charming Isn't Coming about women and money. And I was like, oh, this is a thing. Like, this is still a thing, you know? And then in the process of working with Jesse, I realized like, hey, you know, regardless of gender, there's pressures around money. So let's take a look at that and let's have a safe space to create that. I created Last Chance Coaching as a class because it's some of the most challenging coaching I do, and no one trained me. And mm-hmm. I figure, like, for the things out there that we don't know how to do, that's what community is for, right? Like, hey, we don't know how to do this, or how do we tackle this together? So I really think, you know, a lot of times it's just a matter of co-creation. So one of the classes Rusty's going to create next, he's like, look, we all talk about emotions in coaching. He's like, but no one's talking about humor in coaching. And, you know, I can't wait for that sarcastic man to make a class on humor. Like, that's mm-hmm. going to be so much fun. So I think learning should be fun. I feel like if you have a room full of coaches, that's an amazing space. I feel like that's really important. And then for me, like, all are welcome, right? You know, it's really a matter of, it doesn't matter whether you have a credential or not. Some of our classes are though the classes we teach are for coaches, we have non-coaches take them. So I've had financial planners and finances and gender. We've had people that work with men in authentic masculinity, even though they're not coaching, because coaching skills, in my opinion, are life skills. They make you a better leader. They make you a better facilitator. They make you better at speaking. They make you better at sales. They make you better in your relationships. So I really think that I feel very strongly that learning should be fun. Mm-hmm. I'm not a lecturer. So, you know, that really heavily influences my kind of style and the space that I create. But I think the whole point of coaching is to co-create. And so that it should be places that everyone feels welcome. And then also that there's a place of co-creation. So for example, I've done more work in diversity, equity, and inclusion, but a lot of coaches haven't. So the next class that we're producing is, you know, not what is diversity, equity, inclusion, but what is DEI for coaches? What does that look like for your clients? How does that show up in the work that you're doing? So much of what we do is we take a look at ourselves, and then we take a look at how do we support ourselves and our own development? How do you feed that tree, right? How do you feed that tree so that we better serve others?
Hmm. Oh. what you're doing sounds very dynamic. If you need another set of eyes on the humor and sarcasm and coaching, wouldn't know it from this conversation, but I'm actually qualified.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, because I know part of the premise is like, what is a master certified coach and what does that even mean? Yeah. I think one of the hard things about becoming a master certified coach is that nobody could tell you. It is, there is no spoon, right? Like you have to decide. But one of my more recent mentees, he had worked with a mentor and he felt that the mentor was trying to shape him into the kind of coach she was instead of the kind of coach that he was, mm-hmm. which is why he hopped over and thankfully mm-hmm. worked with me. And I was like, no, it's about who you are and what you sound like. So I think the thing is that if coaches are aspiring to the next level and they can't get there and there's no map, that can be really frustrating, but there's no map because you get to blaze your own trail. And yeah. that's not necessarily fun when you're standing there with a machete and you're like, where am I supposed to go? What am I supposed to do? But you know, that's part of the discovery. And it's really important that we as coaches walk that walk, because we ask our clients really hard questions and we expect our clients to grow and follow through. So I really think the ongoing development is so important. And I've been talked down to by some MCCs, and I don't know if they meant it. I assume that they didn't mean it. But you know, I did feel like, hey kid, what do you know? Right. So it's also important to know, like, that's not appropriate. And you know, I feel like MCC, you've really made the commitment. Not only is it in the ethics that we continue to learn, but that we've ultimately made that lifelong commitment to continuing to grow ourselves and learn as coaches.
I've got to say that the months since I earned my credential, it's about a half year now, have been so weird, as though I'm on a stranger learning curve, in more alien terrain than at any point before. It's kind of like everything I learned, everything I knew kind of doesn't matter now. And it's kind of back to square one. And, you know, whether that means, you know, having jumped through all of the hoops to call myself a master, now I have to invent the whole thing again. Mm-hmm. That's cool. But you know, it's like, I'm just trying on all kinds of different things, whether it's, you know, using the outdoors as my backdrop for a coaching session, or got an electric guitar hanging up on the wall. I've used that as a prop in coaching and it's really fun. And knowing that there are just, you know, to become a master level coach, you really are just jumping through a few small hoops. And then after that, like you said, you get to design who you are as a coach. You get to paint your own canvas, but the real challenge is, okay, then step off the canvas and continue being art.
I mean, there is no spoon, right. You know, but what I will say is that those hoops did not feel small to me. And, you know, it's, I do what helped. And this was part of what helped me keep going in my pursuit of MCC mm-hmm. is that there was a point at which when I was, cause I learned to coach through a non-approved program and then years later got my PCC. And there was a moment where I was just like, this is not really my jam. Like, I'm not an empty vessel. I get paid for my opinions. Like, do I really want to do this? Mm-hmm. And then I learned so much through that process. So it's kind of like you go through the fire and it can, you know, hey, if someone has a smooth journey with no problems, like, bless you, like, have a good time. Cause that's not necessarily the norm, but I do think it's so important. Like it is the evolution, right? We've evolved, but that doesn't mean you stop.
Yeah. Yeah, and I want to clarify, when I say small hoops, I don't mean no big deal. I mean you have to make yourself, you know, get rid of all those opinions, get rid of all of that, you know, consulting stuff in order to fit through. Yeah. Nothing particularly easy about it. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Diana, thank you very much for coming, sharing yourself. What I love about this interview, what I love about all of the interviews, is just how different every Master Certified Coach strikes me. And that's what I'm committed to showcasing. You know, there is no monolith here. I mean, unless it's a monolith of people who really do have a lot more space in a conversation than most, but that seems antithetical to being a monolith. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. And I appreciate the investment that you're making, because this is just, it's a nebulous thing and people want to know more. And yep. I think to be able to point people back to themselves and say, hey, like, you can do this if this is what you want, is important.
Yeah. So if you're thinking about becoming a Master Certified Coach, you know, think of this portrait that you've just listened to as something that breaks down whatever mystery was there before. There are many other portraits in this gallery to take a look at and take in. If you are a Master Certified Coach and you would like others to see you, reach out to me. I'm at gideon@kstreetcoaching.com. I would love to speak to you and get to know you, and have so many others get to know you as well. Thank you.
Hey, thanks.
You've been listening to the Master Coach Collection. When you subscribe to this podcast, you can lose yourself in hours of rich conversation and share today's episode with someone who will absolutely love it.